Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of my colleagues at the Center for Security Policy is a woman of uncommon intelligence, also a quite extensive background in the business of intelligence. She is, of course, Claire Lopez, the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She is a woman of many parts, in addition to having served as a clandestine officer in the Central Intelligence Agency for some 20 years. She has emerged as one of the really go-to resources on a whole host of issues involving national security, most especially questions like the Iranian threat and what to do about it, and so much more in that region of the world and beyond. It's always a delight to have her with us. Claire, thanks so much for joining me. Great to have you back.
Thank you, Frank. Always glad to be with you.
Well, before we turn to the Middle East, I did want to get sort of your take on what has happened in Las Vegas in the past couple of days, and what, if anything, there may be behind this shooting. I understand that both the Islamic State and Antifa, or people who purport to be associated with these outfits, are claiming credit. Seems unlikely it's both, but might it be either? What do we know, and what does your gut instinct tell you?
Well, it's a really confusing case so far, Frank, and here we are barely a couple of days after the shooting occurred, so much of the investigation is still ongoing, of course. But we have this 64-year-old shooter named Stephen Paddock, who is a retired resident of Mesquite, Nevada, which to gamble. He was a high-stakes gambler, a retiree, apparently did quite well at it, had a $400,000 home, made a lot of money at gambling, apparently. Family members, including a brother who's spoken to the media, say there's no indication that they ever had that he had any inclination to such a murderous act as the killing. Now we have 59 dead and well over 500 more injured. I mean, as you say, yes, both online and social media, Antifa has claimed Stephen Paddock as one of their own, but so has the Islamic State through a news release on its Amaq news agency outlet claimed responsibility. And the Islamic State is not known to claim attacks with which it has had nothing to do.
There is, of course, as we've documented in some of the terrific monographs that you have helped edit at the Center for Security Policy Press, a red-green axis. And it, I guess, might be that this individual could be both, but we don't know much. Let me turn to another topic that I know you are also seized with, Claire, and that is Turkey. A country that has, for many, many years, basically since just after World War II, been considered an important ally, a very strategic nation, but that has become in recent years increasingly, well, unreliable, if not downright hostile to us as a result of the trajectory that Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey has taken it, very much in the direction of a Sharia supremacist Islamic Republic. Talk about Turkey both in its own region and what it's up to here, Claire.
Well, you're absolutely right, Frank, that over the last decade and more, now President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his AK party in Turkey have turned Turkey completely away from the 20th century modernization, secularization agenda of Kemal Atatürk of the early 20th century and much more towards a neo-Ottoman jihad state. In other words, a return of Turkey to its former status, if you will, as a jihad state, seeking for power and influence in the region, clearly, in the Middle East. More troubling for us here in the United States is the role that Turkey seems to be playing here. And that directly with the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood. It would seem in a way that within the OIC, that's the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, that perhaps in some sense as I've been putting it, the baton has been passed in terms of leadership, Dawa leadership in any case, been passed from Saudi Arabia to Turkey. And so here in the U.S., we've seen the new Islamic Center, a Turkish Islamic Center belonging to the government agency, the Diyanet, in Lanham, Maryland, attended by President Erdogan and then President Obama, but also the construction of many Turkish mosques belonging to a network attached to that facility in Lanham, Maryland. And then, as I said, a very close relationship with the top leadership of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, and Claire, I think particularly of concern is that we're looking at, as you say, a burgeoning sort of infrastructure being sponsored by the Turks. Talk a little bit about the piece of this that is seemingly at odds with the Erdogan regime, but I'm afraid has a lot to do with at least its agenda in this country, namely the Gulen movement's academic institutions, charter schools, now hundreds of them, I believe, across the United States.
Yes, indeed. Well, Fethullah Gulen, of course, is a Sunni Turkish cleric, has been living in exile in the United States in a guarded compound in the Poconos Mountains in Pennsylvania since 1999, ideologically a pea in a pod with President Erdogan in Turkey, formerly allies, as a matter of fact, for many, many years in Turkey. And that is to say they are both followers of the doctrine of the Muslim Brotherhood. They are jihadists. Here in the United States, though, as you say, Frank, it's very concerning that Gulen has established a large network of charter schools, typically STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math curriculum, often in underserved areas, which parents love to get a new choice of a good school, but also a network of cultural centers, Turkish cultural centers. And the problem with these is not that there's an Islamic curriculum being taught in the schools. There's not, to the best of our knowledge, but rather that there's an emphasis on a promotion of Turkish culture and history and language in a way as a sort of a gateway to Islam in that way.
This is the subject of a terrific book that you co-authored, The Gulen Movement, Turkey's Islamic Supremacist Cult and Its Contributions to the Civilization Jihad. Claire, speaking of Turkey, one of its most neuralgic points is the extent to which the Kurds are seeking to separate themselves from Turkey. There are a lot of them in particularly southeastern Turkey. We've been discussing elsewhere in the program, my commentary, this referendum that Kurds in northern Iraq have recently overwhelmingly approved for independence. Talk a little bit about this referendum, if you would, and what it might mean for the Turks and perhaps others in the region.
Well, the Kurds are one of the largest nations of people on the face of the earth that have never had an actual nation state of their own. Instead, beginning in the 20th century or even before, perhaps, the great powers, meaning Britain, France, and eventually, yes, the United States too, sought to keep Kurdish people separated and divided up into different countries. So there are large Kurdish populations in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. And it is those in northern of what used to be called Iraq that formed the Kurdish Regional Government, or KRG, back in the time of Saddam Hussein, when the U.S. and the Western powers helped to protect them against Saddam Hussein. Well, that entity, the KRG, is what just now, a few days ago, held this referendum asking for people's opinion on whether they wanted to separate or to be independent. Overwhelmingly, those who voted said yes. The problem, of course, is that neighboring states, namely Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey, all with populations of Kurds within their borders, are now concerned that there would be more separatism that would tear their nation states apart, change borders. And the United States, up until now, at least, has expressed disapproval of the Kurdish referendum, and I guess of any separatism in the vain, I think it's vain hope, that the former Iraq can somehow be patched back together again.
Claire, this is a subject to which we're going to have to return, because I know there are concerns about some of the Kurdish policies and practices, particularly on the part of some other people who live in their neighborhood, the Yazidis notably. I want to talk with you also about what might flow from this independence movement, but that is for another day. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll look forward to picking up again on this and other topics with you very soon. Next up, we will be speaking with Sean Davis of TheFederalist.com. He is a go-to guy on the culture war as well as the implications for gun control of this campaign now following from the Nevada shooting. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.